Welcome to the Circle for Presence. So just by the name of it, of course, our idea is to learn how to be in present moment. And I teach from a variety of things and topics, but specifically from Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and Marshall Rosenberg, who founded and created nonviolent communication. So I will be pulling predominantly from those, but occasionally I'll pull from others as well. And what I'd like to do is start out this morning with just a simple prayer, or just an opening to sort of get us settled, get us present, and sort of prepare the space and the time, which are illusions, but it's what we work with in third dimension. So to prepare that so that we can really take in what it is we each individually need to take in. Okay? Okay. Big deep breath. Universal energy, source, higher power, great spirit, all the names that the one is known by. Allow us to have open hearts and open minds and to get exactly what it is we need, each of us individually and as a group. And let us start from a space of gratitude. Okay. Couple of housekeeping duties I want to take care of today. I've heard some people, I've gotten some responses about the day and the time. So I am open to playing with doing something different with the schedule if the majority of people that would work for you better. But what I need to find out is maybe consider emailing me what your three best days and times might be for this. If it's this day and time, then that's fine. But I'm also looking ahead at spring and summer because we had to cancel it because of the good weather. Because Saturday mornings, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I like to go down to farmer's market. We get up Saturday mornings and we want to go play in the sunshine, right? So maybe there's an early weekday evening that this might work better on, or I'm just saying that I'm open. And so, if you don't have my email address, my cards are back there, and also the flyer for this, the Circle for Presence, which you're welcome to take to pass out to people, also has my email address on it. So just email me, think about it, and go, what would be my three best times? And then I can start getting a feel for it, because we're not going to change right away, but I'd have to make sure that the church, this room was available, and, you know, blah, 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 all that business stuff. So I wanted to throw that out. Annie? On the telephone. It's off, do you notice? Yes. Yes, it apparently doesn't have an off switch. So, thanks to Eric, we have just removed it. I wouldn't have attempted it because I really don't want to buy the church another phone. And so, but he knew how to, you know, so, yeah. So we won't have that interruption. Yeah, that'll be nice. Okay. So trying to think, was there, I keep thinking there was something else. Well, if it is, it'll pop up and I'll interrupt myself. Okay. For those of you who don't know how I do this, I will do a lot of teaching. I am open for the most part at any moment to be interrupted with a question. At one point I will open it up for questions and comments, so that will happen. we do a 15-minute silent meditation, and I'll share some pointers if that's new for you. For those of you that it's not new for, then you've got your own way of going there. But there are folks that have never done that before. And 15 minutes of silence, absolute silence, can be excruciating because all of a sudden this gets louder. So I offer some tools that can help kind of get you there, at least ones that you can try out and play with a little bit and experiment. And eventually we each, I think, find what works for us the best. So I want you to hear most specifically that there's no one right way, okay? Whatever works for you for getting there is the right way for you, okay? Okay, let's jump off to the races. If you've noticed what I've put up on the board, this is what I got clearly, and I got it in meditation. And then I got it reaffirmed by a person that I was talking with. And in fact, what she said was, you need to teach a class on this. And I had just gotten it that morning in meditation that I was to teach it in circle. So I thought, okay. So the little white lies that we tell for love, approval, and appreciation. Now, when I want to give you a foundation with which those of you that like to research and read and check up on some stuff, the whole thing behind the love, approval, and appreciation, you can actually get from a whole lot of master teachers. Eckhart Tolle talks about this. Rosenberg talks about this in a little, well, quite a bit different way, but he still presents it. Byron Katie really focuses on it. One of her sayings that I have up in my office is, if I were to have a prayer, it would be this: God, please spare me from the desire for love, approval, and appreciation. Because when I am looking for it outside of myself, that's where the dishonesty and stepping out of integrity with me begins. Because if I am seeking your approval, if I am seeking your love, if I'm seeking appreciation even from you, whether it's friendship, whether it's you're my boss, whether you're a coworker, whether you're my child, let alone that significant other relationship, you know, that's where we start being dishonest, okay? And I don't know about you guys, but I've done this tons. Because part of it was I believed that it was partially a social responsibility. If you're at someone's house and they're fixing dinner and they put gravy in front of you, that you're supposed to have some, even just a little. Or you have something that they're and it's just like not good, and you you know. And you're kind of, oh, it's delicious. It really is. It's good. I just don't have much of an appetite. You know, therein begins that, because two things are happening. One, obviously there's something going on in our relationship that I either need your love, approval, or appreciation. I don't want you pissed off at me. I don't want you irritated. The other side of the same coin is I am giving you tremendous power, or okay. Sometimes the spaghetti gets wrapped up in there. I am assuming tremendous power over how you feel. I don't want to say it because it'll hurt your feelings. I can't hurt your feelings. I really can't. Even if I was downright rude and I said, you know what, this really tastes like caca. I don't know. You don't even want to put this in the garbage, man. That's just toxic. You know, I could be that unkind and rude. And if you are in a space where you know that whatever's my opinion, whatever my thing is, that it's not about you and you don't take it personal, you're not going to be affected. You're going to go, oh, well, I guess don't eat it then. And that'll be it. It'll be a done deal. So, when I hold back from being honest, then with you about liking something, not liking something, going along with something, whatever, or not bringing something up, because I have fear that you're going to be upset. I have fear that you're going to react in such a way that I won't get your love. I won't get your approval. You won't appreciate anything I do. Then I have begun a totally dishonest relationship with you. I have put on a mask and presented a certain thing. Now, an example, and I don't remember who, Eric.
So I can't hurt your feelings, only you can hurt your feelings.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
only I can hurt my feelings.
This is something that I was struggling with that I had said to a person that goes along these lines. A gal I was with, you know, we rolled around a little years ago, and she goes, "Why didn't you kiss me?" I said, "Well, your teeth are really decayed," and they were. I said it straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, was that...
No, no. What you were was honest. She asked, you answered. Now, if you had not said anything, that would have been, oh my gosh, I don't want to tell her that her teeth are rotten and falling out of her head because I won't get any more. Yeah? But see, the thing is, yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And it also said it, you also said it in a kind way. You know, it was just a fact. Yeah, you want to be responsible and being kind. Yeah, the way I jokingly said it, yeah, your teeth are rotten and falling out of your head would not have been a kind. Yeah, it wouldn't have been kind, but, you know, your teeth are kind of in bad shape. And, you know, bottom line is a lot of guys would not have said that because they want to be able to come back and get a little more. Okay, so here's the mask, right? We put the mask on and pretend who we're going to be. In one, and I don't remember where I heard this or read it, but it sticks out in my head because one of the examples given was called the Oatmeal Man. This guy and this girl were dating. They had their first sleepover. And when they got up in the morning, she fixed oatmeal. That was her breakfast every morning, and so she fixed enough for both of them. He couldn't stand oatmeal. He couldn't stand hot cereal of any kind. But he sat down, he said, "Thank you." I mean, he had just had a great roll in the hay all night long, so, you know, he wasn't going to be messing with that. They ended up getting married, and apparently 20 years later, he's still eating oatmeal in the morning and can't stand it. And it has built into this resentment. But what do you think his wife believes? He loves oatmeal, just like she does. How is she supposed to know if he doesn't say anything? But that very first time when he walked out into the kitchen and instead of saying, "Gosh, I really appreciate the fact that you made breakfast for me, and I don't like oatmeal." You know, and there's a little word, a key word that's really important to know when you are telling somebody something honest. You notice how I suggested saying something appreciative first? Because her intention, of course, was very loving, you know. But I didn't say, "But I don't like oatmeal." When we use "but," we've canceled out what we've just said. We've said, there's this. Yeah, but, you know, if you say "and," it becomes inclusive. And then the first piece can still be heard and taken in. So that's, our words are hugely powerful. And that's why, for one thing, getting present is so important, because most of what comes out of our mouth, we have no awareness of. We're saying stuff left, right, and center, and we are not even present enough to be aware of how we're saying things, or maybe the tone in our voice or the look on our face, you know? So, all right. So it also goes to if I've presented this mask, I begin to add pieces to it in the relationship, right? I like stock car racing because you do. And so I go to stock car races with you. And then about 4 years into the relationship, I'm like so done with stock car races and everything about them that I could spit sideways. So all of a sudden I'm going, yeah, no, you go, you go. I'm going to stay home and take care of some stuff, or I'm going to go to my poetry reading group, or, and so, you know, he goes off and he does his thing and he's a little irritated, or maybe he's even okay because, you know, I'm there most of the time, but this is not that big a deal. Do you think it becomes a big deal by the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth time that I'm saying, yeah, you know, I really don't want to go? Because I'm not going to be honest and say, you know what, I never did like the garbage. Never did like stock cars. It's too loud. Everybody's crazy. It's just not my thing. It smells bad. And, you know, you go. I don't need to go. But I'm not going to get that honest. I'm going to do this sort of backstepping. So I'm still not being honest. And being really honest might have been saying, you know, I know that might sound like a wonderful date for us to go on because you like stock car racing. And it might be really exciting, and it's just not something I'm interested in. So could we think of something else? Because if I say that, you might lose interest in me. And maybe I'm attracted to you. So, you know, I'm going to go along with, right? That's what we do. Heather? Good question. Because yes, that's a possibility, but unless you've got two honest people working together, here's the scenario with that stock car thing. Let's say he's dating a librarian. And yeah, she likes to do museums, she goes to poetry reading classes, she likes to do watercolor painting classes. And so she says, yeah, I'll go to that, but, you know, would you be open to going with me to the museum? And so, you know, there's that chemistry thing going, because I'm going to take a little side trip here. So help me come back if I lose track. Love is not blind. Love is not blind. Us getting our needs met blinds us. We don't fall in love. That's the junior high notion, maybe even grade school. We fall in lust and like. That's how we're built. Okay? I mean, that's actually okay. People sometimes hear the word lust and they go, oh, no, not me. Oh, yeah, you. All the hormones and the chemistry and the ooey gooey stuff that feels so good, and why we get locked in and we start liking that person, right? We're spending time with them. They like us. We like them. And so we're doing things that sort of feed that. It's through that process, if we keep the mask down and remain honest, that we develop what the real foundation of a relationship is. Anybody got a guess what that is? Nope. Well, yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. It's respect. Respect is the foundation of any healthy relationship. Okay? If I don't respect you, the next level probably isn't going to occur much. I'm not going to have much of a sense of safety or trust with you. I'm not going to share things like, you know what, I really don't like oatmeal. I don't want to eat oatmeal. Because you might tell me, okay, fine, and then you don't want to see me anymore, you know? Or I don't want to go to the stock car races. Or maybe I've just offered a compromise, and he says, no, I don't do museums, but I'd really like you to come to the stock car races with me. Okay? And we cave. So now I've taught you how to treat me. Everything I do and don't do teaches you about me. So if I tell you, I don't do stock car races. But if you can talk me into going, then you learn that, for one thing, my words don't mean a lot. That you can talk me into stuff. That I'll give in. I won't hold my boundary. Okay. So we don't fall in love. We fall in lust and like. So there's all the hormones going on and all the sparklies, and it's, and there's this whole thing that happens in that process, and it's supposed to. It's supposed to. But hopefully what's also happening, if we're present, so presence, yes, would really pay off big time here, is that we would stay in our integrity, meaning I would be true to myself. And that if I learned that because I don't want to go to the stock car races and I'm not willing to go there, then, and you leave, I'm okay. Because what that tells me, we wouldn't have had much in common to begin with, to establish any kind of a solid relationship on. So the relationship has to eventually move from falling into lust and like to building a foundation of respect and then trust, which is the safety factor. And it's not about this woundology thing that everybody's gotten into from the 90s. You know, it's like, you know, well, I was honest. I told him all about my horrible childhood. Yeah, that's not the kind of honesty I'm talking about. That's drama. Okay? That's like, I want you to see how vulnerable and tender and needy I am so that you'll take care of me. You know, really, that's what that's about. So what the true honesty is about is being willing to be who you are, is to say, no, I don't care to do that. Thank you anyway, though. I appreciate the thought, and I know that's something you love to do. It's not something I'm interested in. Being authentic. Yeah, being. Well, and that's where I have people, the conditions thing is, that's where you can get trapped, because where I was going and then I kind of let it drop was when he says, yeah, no, I'm not into the art museum, but I really want you to go to the stock car races with me. So now you either are going to have to go or look bad, so you're stepping out of, or you are showing that what you were doing was playing a negotiation game. And with stuff like that, I don't know that that's really a place you want to go. Would be no. Because, here's why. Because you're establishing a relationship. So in the beginning, you're getting to know each other. Be honest about who you are. So if later down the road you want to offer up the museum, don't do it then. You want to find out, is this person interested in this as a separate thing? So when you're looking at, oh, this is going to be at the museum this weekend, would you like to go see that with me? And then be willing to go do that. Okay? Yeah.
What about if you've never done that? Like, you don't know if you like that.
Then I'd be honest about it. If you don't, I've never been to a stock car thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd like to go and check it out because, frankly, I've never been to one, so I don't know whether I'd enjoy it or not. And I would like to reserve my opinion about them and whether I'd continue after the first one. You know? So, yeah.
Question on, I don't like oatmeal, but, not funny. I don't like oatmeal, and I appreciate you making oatmeal.
No, I appreciate that you made breakfast for me, and I really don't like oatmeal. Okay. Well, in an established relationship, I think there is room for some negotiation. But
if it's something that turns my stomach, then I shouldn't ever eat oats.
Right.
It's something I don't mind. It's just not my favorite.
Well, I still, you know what, in a case like that, that's the kind of negotiation I would leave out of it. You know why? Because you still might get the no answer. And then you're saying no because, well, you're not going to do what I want to do, so I'm not going to do what you want to do. That's the position it puts us in. So in that arena, I wouldn't go there. I would still keep it a separate deal. You know, when the museum thing comes up, then I ask and present it as just an open possibility all by itself. Okay? Because otherwise, I know that my partner's going because he wanted me to go to the stock car races. Exactly, yeah. So it's, you know, in a way, it's another little white lie. I'll go and pretend if you'll go and pretend. You know? And it just does. And so I think, you know, really it's about finding, even in an established relationship, what do we really have here in common that we actually do enjoy together? And allow each person in that relationship to be honest about that rather than I'm just not getting my way, which brings me to, this is a big one, and I'm seeing, I mean, it's just all over the place because in a way, this, I'm going to show you another way to look at this. Yeah? Isn't that what this is? Isn't that what this is? If you love me, you'll do what I want.
My kids don't love me.
Yeah. No one loves me.
Yeah. And so what happens is then when you don't do what I want, what goes on up here? I'm not loved. You don't love me. You don't really care about me. If you really cared about me, I mean, didn't you see that movie last week? He cared so much about her, he sacrificed everything. So, what's your problem? If you suffer, you'll be rewarded. Yeah. Compromise comes in, I believe, when it's not a big deal. Like, for example, if you come to me and you say, I want us to go see this football game. And I'm not into sports. We won't go there. Because I've made a totally embarrassed ass out of myself at a basketball game. Who are the people in Portland that play? Trailblazers. I went to a Trailblazers game, and I got upset when they were doing the quiet, you know, where they have the guys are all lined up, and there's somebody here, and they're going to throw that thing. And I'm thinking, you know, we need to be quiet and respectful here. But all the Portland people were saying all this mean stuff, you know, because it was the other team. And I stood up and I said, give him a goddamn chance. Last game I went to. All right. So, but you want to go to a football game and I'm thinking, you know, I want to spend time with him. So I could be honest with you and say, I'm not really into the football, but I'd love being outside. I love that we would take maybe a picnic lunch to have with us there and a thermos of coffee and I'd get to spend time with you. So as long as you know I'm not there all excited about the football, I would love to go. There's some compromise. But I'm also being authentically myself. I'm not leading him to believe I'm a big football fan or that I even know what the game's about. Okay? I'm getting needs met. And I'm being real clear about what those needs are, right? I'm getting time with you. I'm getting time in the fresh air. I'd love to be around a lot of people that are happy and excited and doing all this yah yah stuff, even though I don't get it. And we're having a picnic. So cool. I'm going to have a good time, but for a different reason. So you would know very clearly, you know, and you might decide to go to a poetry reading thing with me based on maybe something similar. It's a cold, dreary winter day. We haven't had a chance to connect. And you're honest with me, you know, I'm really not into all that poetry stuff, but I would love to go with you just to spend time with you and see you in your element. And then maybe we can go to lunch afterwards. And that way I can get the time I want with you. And, you know, bottom line is there's nothing else going on right now. Can I take that? Can I hear that? Like, oh, what? So you're bored, so you'll go? You know? But if I'm not expecting you to want to just be there with me and I can accept that's your authentic self, I can be thrilled by the fact you're going to go. Jan.
So a couple of weeks later, the team is going to come back to me. I only wanted to go with me. But you had such a good time.
I had a good time because I was with you. And today, these are other things that my focus and attention is on. And I just wouldn't be there 100%. So you continue to be authentic. You continue to be honest. That you let them know. Yeah, because then you can refer back to that. Yes, I went because I wanted to be with you. Last night we went to a party. We had a great time. We went out for dessert, just the two of us after. I got that one-on-one time. Today, my attention's really split. I apologize, but, you know, this is really where my attention is. And a game just really isn't going to meet my needs today. So he may even be irritated by it. He may even be pissed off about it because it's how he's choosing to hear it. Okay, right? But the difference is he doesn't have to second guess what's going on with me. He doesn't have to try to read between the lines and what is she thinking and where is she really at. He gets to really know who I am, and that when I am with him, every time I'm with him, he knows that I want to be there with him. And that when I'm not, you know, how many times have you guys experienced in a relationship your partner's with you and you really know they don't want to be there? They are bored to death. They went because they were afraid of your anger. You manipulated them. You twisted their arm, you did whatever to get them there. If you love me, you'll do what I want. Sort of like the two-year-old, you know, I want what I want when I want it. Now would be good. And I don't want to hear any problems about that, okay? So if you've done that, and some of them are not little white lies. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have to own, I told some whoppers to get what I wanted. It was all about manipulating. Because I was trying to get him to fit into this ideal of what a partner was. So I see the mask on him because he's done his share of manipulation and white lying and lying by omission and blah, blah, blah. And then I've got a mask on so we've got two masked strangers trying to relate to each other that, you know, sincerely by 10 years down the road, do you think the mask is a little corroded and crumbling? You know, it just isn't going to work anymore. And you may wake up one day and go, I'm married to a stranger. I don't know this person. Or what I do know, what I've begun to learn, they're not somebody I would have married. And I want you to turn it around. Think about that maybe they're having the same thought. They're looking at you and going, oh dear, what did I do? Okay. It's possible, you bet. Yeah. What I recommend to people, first of all, is if you're in an established relationship, obviously, I believe, even if it was just mask to mask, that it was a contract. It was a sacred contract. On a spiritual level, I just absolutely believe that. And so, for right there, I don't believe it was a mistake. Okay? So what I like to suggest to people, and it's a suggestion, it's not a, you know, if somebody's adamant and says, nope, I want out of this deal, I go, well, okay. So if they're open to the suggestion, though, I'd like to say, why don't you try for a while presenting your authentic self and see what happens? Because here's you and here's the other person, and for how many years it's been, doesn't matter, 2, 20, 40, you've been doing the cha-cha in a co-addictive dance, in that mask, right? If you start waltzing, in other words, doing something different, doing, being your authentic self, which you may not even know who the hell is, so you got to find out what that is, they have to do something different. Now, they may decide they want to learn to waltz too, because they like what they're seeing. They want what you have. And from there, you end up with a whole brand new relationship. Okay? But you're two authentic people now. So it's a whole, it's like two new people meeting for the first time coming together. Okay? But there's no guarantee that just because you switch to waltzing, the other person's going to start waltzing. They might say, hey, I found somebody to rumba, and that's a lot hotter. And so they leave. But then you know it's not going to work. And I am going to be true. I'm going to remain true to myself. I'm going to be authentically who I am. Now, that also can be its own set of problems, because a lot of people being their true authentic self, if they've still got resentments to their partner, which they probably do, I'm just going to throw that in. if they still going to get triggered by their partner's behavior. Let's say one thing that the partner always did in the morning was get up and go, you got the coffee ready? And this is something that has pissed you off for 20 years. Now you're learning how to be your authentic self. So what I'm going to tell you is that turning to them in the morning, being your authentic self, is not, no, that's right. That's not being your authentic self. That's taking the big club that you've been building for the last 20 years and pounding them over the head with it. Okay? So being your authentic self is you have to really get present with you. What does presence mean? Presence means being perfectly in the moment. This moment. There is no past. Your partner's, it doesn't matter whether he's ever said that to you or not. It doesn't matter. I love the past because what? It's gone. So being perfectly in this moment, and I'm a woman standing at the kitchen sink doing whatever, when my partner walks in and says, you got the coffee ready this morning? No, honey, I don't. I was going to take care of a few things. You can get it started if you like. If not, I'll get started to it when I get to it. See how neutral that is? Because in that moment, that's what's true. I was going to get to it anyway. Don't I drink coffee? Trust me. Yeah, I do. Give it.
It's hard to get that energy to remain neutral when you say it, when you've got 20 years of life to stop it.
No, not if you get it present. You get present first. You get present first. So you remind you. So the ego, the thinking, the little vulture on my shoulder is going, oh, he's going to walk in here and ask me if the coffee's ready. SOB, rah, 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 rah. And it starts macking up a storm, right? So by the time he walks in, before he even says it, I might be jumping, no, the coffee's not ready. He's like, what? So how about instead, I go, whoa. I'm a woman standing at the sink. I'm washing some dishes. Am I going to make coffee? Yes, I'm going to make coffee. And I'd rather make coffee once this mess is cleaned up, because then it's easier for me. So I'm going to clean these dishes, and I'm going to make coffee. He walks in, says what he says. No, I haven't yet, but I'm going to blah, 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 blah. That's the difference. Get present. If I'm present, I'm going to be more apt to respond from present moment, which is the truth of what is, rather than with all that baggage from the past. Because none of that exists anyway. It's not even real. I keep it real up here. You know, it's like when I, oh yeah, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. And different, yeah, and takes on a whole different hue. So, you know, bottom line is, if I'm wanting that communication to be really clear and come from a loving place, and you might not even be sure if you're in love with that person anymore, that's okay. You can still come from a loving place. What I suggest to you, and this is hard for a lot of people, but what I suggest to you, if we're coming from a wide open heart, then what we're experiencing is that I don't have to like anybody, but I can love all of you, because in each one of you I can see parts of me. If I'm the projector and my whole experience and my world is the projected, then every one of you here this morning, I'm projecting. Just as you are projecting what you see, including me. And however you might be perceiving me, you're not perceiving me the way I'm perceiving me. It's different. Okay? It's through your filters, through your ideas, through your beliefs. So if that's true, for me to say, I don't love you because I don't know you, that doesn't make any sense to me anymore. It really doesn't. And I'm even at a place now where I don't so much even like to go to the I don't like place, because that's resistance. And one of the things that presence, being present, is about is non-resistance, non-judgmental, and non-attachment. So, I'm not attached to whether you love me, approve of me, or appreciate me. That's my job. My job to love me. My job to approve of me and what I'm doing and who I am, how I present myself, and my job to appreciate myself. If you do as well and express that, that's frosting on the cake. No, actually, it's the candles. Because I've already baked the cake, put it on a really pretty platter, and frosted the hell out of it because I really like frosting. But, you know, that's the candles. That helps light the cake up a little bit more. But I am not in need of it. And I'm still okay within who I am. So guess what? That frees you up to being who you are authentically with me. Okay? All right, so I want to stop right here and ask questions. Any more questions, comments?
Wouldn't it be easier when they come in back to the coffee? Mm-hmm. You say, no, I haven't.
Sure.
Rather than giving an explanation.
Absolutely, you can. Absolutely, you can. Except I think sometimes in partnerships, that can be also a manipulation too. No, I haven't. But if the expectation has been going on for 20 years that I make the coffee, and I always have, in kindness to my partner, I would carry it on a little bit more and let him know, I am going to get to it. If you want to, help yourself. Yeah, yeah, which means I'm going to. Yeah, what I'm saying is that I don't respond in the old way. If I'm going to make it, but it's not made yet, it's not about I'm doing it my way because I'm satisfying me. So I'm saying to this person who is used to coming out to the kitchen and the coffee's made and ready to go, and we've always done this, it's a routine, to me it's about being kind. It's filling in the blanks. It's not expecting him to read my mind. Because obviously his next question might be, well, are you gonna? So, I mean, wouldn't that make sense? After 20 years of habitually me making the coffee? So, or when or why not? Yeah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to prevent the bombs. I'm just going to put a stop to them. And I really believe in a lot of prevention when I'm the one doing the changing. I'm the one becoming authentic. My partner's in the dark, chances are. Most people don't have a partner that's also, I mean, I tend to work more with the individual of a partnership, and then eventually the partner will show up like, what the hell's going on here? It's like, oh, nice to meet you. You are in the dark, aren't you? You know, which have a little compassion for him or her, you know? Because that's rough. All of a sudden, this person of so many years, even if it's only five, there's an established routine. So to me, it's about kindness and it's about communication. Heart wide open.
So making the coffee, you don't want to do it in the water because you're doing it at your
heart. Well, if you don't want to make the coffee, then don't.
And the other thing is, why is when they come and you're like, oh, I'm really sorry, but you're really not. You're like, I do it all the time. But you think you're sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna fix
it. Right. Right. The only reason I was saying I haven't made it yet is because I'm a coffee junkie, so I'm going to make the coffee. It's going to get made. Trust me. But it's the apologies. Yeah, and you notice I didn't say that. I just said, no, I haven't made it yet. I'm going to take care of this, and then I'll make it, or you can go ahead and start it now. That way, my partner gets all that information. Does that make sense? So that I'm not just giving him just a little bit, and I can pat myself. And I give him the opportunity to meet his own needs. Absolutely. So even though I'm the one that's always done it, I know that he's not afraid to step in and start making the coffee. Because maybe he did that once 15 years ago, and I said, what the hell are you doing? You're in my kitchen. Get out of here. I'll make the coffee. You make crap coffee anyway. So that might be burned into his brain, and I don't even remember it. So that's why communication is so important. If I am not willing to share the whole thing, then what I, in some respects, and I've seen people do this, or I've heard about it afterwards in my office, and that is, it almost became like a way to set their partner up. It became another way to kind of slap them. You know, because now I'm going to be authentic. Damn it. No, it's not made yet. So, and that's not being authentic. That's still operating out of not being present. It's operating out of your resentments. It's operating out of, well, you really don't love me because you've never really taken care of me the way I wanted to be taken care of. You never give me anything I wanted. Notice all the real global statements, never. Always, yeah. So, which those are usually never true. Nance. Got it. I good.
I like the part where, for myself, that when I'm thinking of that story in my head, the question that they ask is, how do I treat that person when I think that story is true?
Yep.
And it really, you know, like, it was my experience last night of, yeah, I'm treating, I'm withholding. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. That's not true. So,
right.
So that was good. I like that.
Right. Right. And that's where Byron Katie's work to me is so, so, so important because it busts this left, right, and center. That's why I've been directed to, and I'm just following the directions. If you're on my email list, once or twice a week, you will get a little quick thing that says, tonight in my home, that's what we're doing. We're practicing Byron Katie stuff. And you can come, and that's what the focus is. It's not a social time. It's a time where if you show up any time, and you don't have to show up on time and stay the whole 3 hours. I've really tried to make that clear to people. You can show up for the last 45 minutes, last half hour, if you want. That's fine. You'll get a Byron Katie Judge Your Neighbor's worksheet, and you will work a thought through that. And then I will facilitate you going through that, and by the time you get to the end of it, it's amazing what happens and how you look at that thought. How when you first had that thought, and I ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, how intense is that for you? It's intense. It's a 9 or a 10. Okay, we do the work, and then I say, okay, where's it at? And I don't think I've had anybody say anything more than a 4 to me. And for most people, it's down to a 1 or a 0. Because it just shatters it. Kelly?
There are some talks about getting rid of, if you've been together for a while, the past things that have happened. You're trying to be authentic, and it's hard to just click that off.
Yeah, and that's where Byron Katie's work is really helpful. You start making a list of what all your beliefs are, what my belief is about this person. You really don't think about me ever. You never listen to me. You're always focused on what you want to do, and you really don't care what I want to do. You know, whatever those thoughts are, whatever those are.
How can we reinforce our love for ourselves and our approval and our appreciation instead of
Well, again, and I know this may sound crazy and like I should be getting paid by Byron Katie for pitching her stuff, but it is such the essence, I think, and it's such a simple process. That in doing that work, it always brings us back around to ourselves. And so eventually in that process, if you do it enough, and this is where I'm going to tell you, if you're not willing to do it, and I don't mean do it up here. If you do it up in your head, you're doing it from your ego. You're doing it from thinking and from a mental place, an intellectual place, left brain. You are not going to get the result. Simply by slowing myself down and writing it out is amazing because it slows me down. I have to really stop and think about what I'm writing, right? And that's when I get the powerful result because it'll bring it back to me every time. And it always comes back to I'm the one that has to love, improve, and appreciate myself. And then I begin to see how I've already been doing that. Do I see another hand? Yeah? No? Okay.
I wanted to speak to the getting triggered. And, you know, I triggered something from, you know, my history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my first initial reaction was that, for me, you know, I had this huge pressure in my chest, and I wanted to get it out of me. And that entailed getting my partner.
Mm-hmm.
For that. That's not true, so. When I'm in recovery, I can, like, you know, call somebody else, try to detox that down, do that by the same thing. But I think the part about sharing with my partner is more coming from a place of, this isn't about me. This is about something historical, and I just want you to know this is just a part of me. It's not a, you know, I think it's a getting to know me and sharing who I am. And,
That's where I would disagree. Up till that point, I think what you're doing is being communicative by saying, this is not about you. This is about my history. Something's gotten triggered. But to say that's who you are is not true. Take that through the four questions. Because right now, in this moment, that is not true. That's in the past. It's why if we keep bringing it forward, we keep having it be, we keep interpreting, because you haven't questioned it. I I took a whole lot of my thoughts from my history. And I had a pretty horrendous history. And I took those through the questions. And not always did it jump down even to a 3 or a 2. Sometimes it only notched it down to a 6 or a 7. So then I took another piece of it through. So it literally was just layer, layer. And every time I took it down, it got less, to where now I just don't experience it. I just don't experience it. And when I do, I know it's because I'm not present. There are times that I do, but it's not, and the only time I do is when I'm not present and the trigger isn't nearly what it was. And in fact, now when the trigger happens, I'm instantly aware, oh, I remember this ugly, dark place because I'm not present. So I might say, I'm having a moment. I need a little time here. I need to regroup and get back into present moment because, and I don't want to go into all the woundology around it. Because what that does with most people is that they start treading like we're broken glass. And they don't know what to do with us. And it becomes a manipulation on a subconscious level that we're not even aware of. So if I'm feeling particularly vulnerable, I can throw out some of those signals, and I don't even know I'm doing it. Okay? I don't want to spend a lot of time because then I'm spending a lot of time in that stuff, and I don't want to stay there. What I do is say, excuse me, I'll go to the bathroom or I'll go to, you know, somewhere where I can get a little space, and then I'll focus on, where are you right now? Get back here. And I call my spirit back. And I get back into this moment. This moment, I'm a woman standing up. I mean, bottom line is, I don't care who we are. We're either standing up, sitting down, or lying horizontal. So that's a good place to start. Am I breathing? Well, not as well as I could have been. You know, so I get up, I pay attention to my breath. I don't go to what I'm thinking. Because my thinking will trash me. He doesn't love me. He wants to leave. And then if I stay there, what's going to happen? All that old stuff that I've worked on for years, which was nothing more than managing the ego. I wished I could have learned that I could sidestep the ego totally just by getting into present moment. Somebody gave me those tools a lot sooner, would have saved me a lot, but, you know, took what it took. So I focus on what is going on right now, Karen. What the heck is going on right now? You're in the bathroom. You're sitting on the side of the tub. You're breathing. I'm the only one that can abandon myself. Nobody else can abandon me. And when I look back on my past relationships, I abandoned myself before they did, and I abandoned them before they left. Because in me abandoning myself and desperately needing this from them and trying to get that from them one way or another and not always getting it, I began to abandon them. So I've abandoned me. I've abandoned that. Where the heck am I then at that point? And anybody in their right mind would say, where's the exit? Run! I mean, you know, honest to God, that's the truth. That's the way I see it now. You know, the fact that few of those guys hung around as long as they did, it's like, damn, they should have gotten medals or something, either that or they were just totally friggin' insane too, you know, so they were comfortable with it, I guess. But you know, I have to own that bottom line is if I go there and I stay in my thinking about it, it's just my thinking. It's the thoughts. And that's one thing that I really want people to begin to understand. You are not your thoughts. You're not the thinker. Get your mind wrapped around that one. You are not your thoughts. You can disidentify from your thoughts. But the ego, the only way it can survive is to be in past or present or future, and it will not only identify with those thoughts, but it attaches to them. This is me! And when somebody says, well, if I'm not my thoughts, who am I? You are the listener. Who's hearing the thoughts? Who's hearing your thoughts? Who's that? That's the I am presence. That's what true presence is. Annie.
And from what I hear you saying, what I feel like today is the reason I get triggered is because I have an attachment to my story.
Yes. Yes.
And
you're still identifying.
I told myself in my little head, I've listened to my story so many times that now all I have to do is say one word.
It's my identity, and I will fight for the right to have it.
Yes. So if I can take a deep breath and stand up to the point, and not be attached to that story.
Then all the... It's peaceful. Absolutely. Viktor Frankl wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and he was a psychiatrist before World War II, before Nazi Germany began. So when Nazi Germany, and he was Jewish, and when Hitler did his thing, he ended up in one of the major, I think it was Auschwitz? Was it Auschwitz? And he survived. And when he, after the camps were liberated, he was one of the guys, being a psychiatrist, that was helping the other survivors cope with what they'd experienced. And one of the things that he, and when I read this book, this is when this started really turning stuff around for me about my history. And in fact, I even try to refer to it as the history, because my keeps me attached to it. It's mine. Okay, and don't you talk bad about it, because that's just sacrosanct, you know, that's just bad juju. So one of the things he said was, he would tell them, the fire is in your head. The fire is in your head. And what he meant by the fire was all that stuff that you're still having nightmares about, you're still screaming about, you're still crying about, you're still... you know, jumping and having the startle response and all that stuff. I mean, he didn't realize it, but he was dealing with people with severe PTSD. Why didn't he have it? He witnessed the same stuff. He'd been starved right down to a stick himself, believing that any hour could be his last on this planet. Having the dogs brought in and, you know, just all the horrendous, horrible things that happened in those concentration camps. Why didn't he have PTSD? And he didn't even, I mean, that wasn't even a label then. But he helped thousands of people let that go. And basically what he was doing was teaching them, get present. Where are you right now? Right now. Did you eat today? What'd you eat? Oh, you have clean clothes on. Tell me about that. Where'd you get them? Oh, you had a shower today. Really? And you live where? Nice to know. And you slept in the same bed you slept in now for the last 3 months? Is it clean? No lice? No fleas? Good to know. Get back into this moment. If I'm always back here, I'm never in this moment. And remember how I've taught about how the first thing, our circumstances do not create our emotions. Our thoughts, so if I'm back here, those thoughts create the emotion, anguish, anxiety, fear, all that stuff. That emotion is energy that goes forward and creates my circumstances and draws more people similar to what I experienced back here. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but how many times have you recognized that partners you had or very close friends that you had were like your mom or your dad? The neglectful or the abusive parent. Okay? That's why. We keep attracting them onto our path because that energy is going out going, this is what I know. Not this is what I want, because that's not what you want, but it's familiar. So, and plus, my thoughts, my energy creates. And I'm not talking woo-woo stuff here. This is scientifically proven. Institute of Heart Math. They are now measuring the bioelectromagnetic energy that emanates from one human being's heart in miles. Miles. I just think that is phenomenal. We are so much more powerful than we even have a clue about. We don't have the slightest idea. I mean, you've all heard that we only operate with, what, 5 or 10% of our brain? Have you ever wondered about that? What's going on with the other 95%? And what it could do if you could tap even into just 20% more of that? You know? I mean, that's amazing to me. That is absolutely amazing.
But at this point, I've had so many personal experiences with that help, with that energy.
That you understand it.
That I absolutely believe it.
Uh-huh.
I know that it and it's helping.
Yeah.
Not that anything's really negative.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, too, we get awareness of different things at different times when, I mean, I always thought I was the one that was absolutely barking mad in all my relationships because, well, frankly, I was. So there is that. Was is the key word. I don't know. There are some that would argue with me on that, Annie. But I had a conversation with a person yesterday who knows my family really well, who also knows my first husband, my son's father. And she was just casually commenting on how she thinks he's mentally ill. And I had to step back and I went, wow. You know, okay, now the wow part, this is what really gets you. I discovered, it's been a while, I've known this now for a while, that the mother, the woman that raised me, because I was adopted, is mentally ill. And it explained a lot. but I knew that one of my husbands was mentally ill. And there was a pretty good chance the other one had a little bit of that going on too. But then this one, the first one, I just had always seen him as this rock of Gibraltar, this guy that, you know, just sort of fell into the snake pit when he met me. I mean, that's really how my hindsight told me. And then so I said to her, I said, well, what? Give me some evidence that lays that out. And she didn't have any trouble. She went ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And whether he is or not is beside the point. I agreed with her. I'd seen all that stuff. But because my vision was so altered, my perception was altered, I didn't see any of that as that he possibly might have his own issues. You know, that he wasn't this super great guy. I mean, and it wasn't that he wasn't a good guy. All three of them, bless their hearts, have their good qualities. we all do. None of us are all shadow and none of us are all light. It's just the way it is. That's not what the goal is here. So what I got to experience yesterday was right, and then it popped up and I went, Mom, Mom, Mom. I just gravitated to different aspects of her. Because I was still in that story, right? And whenever it got triggered or popped up, and it could be triggered by watching a movie. You know, I don't know about you guys, but it didn't take an intimate partner to pull my triggers. So there's the thoughts, there's the energy of the emotion, there's the created circumstances, and more people brought in that were similar to what I had grown up with until I finally got it.
So do you think it's beneficial, because when I started recovery, you know, that suggestion was to chart, you know, to figure out where you come from, so you know.
Right, right.
And then, you know, basically read that, parent that, grow myself up, would help.
And to me, the growing the self up, that part is what is the piece I kept missing of get into present moment, let it go. That's the growing up. Because one of the things I do with my granddaughter today is when she's all upset about something that happened last week in school, is that I ask her, is that happening right now? Did that happen today in school? No. Well, what happened today in school? Which is still about the past, because, you know, now she's not even in school. It's later in the day. And she'll say all these great, wonderful things. And I said, and what's happening right now? Well, I'm with Yaya and we're coloring. Yeah. So is it really you that feels all sad and angry? Or is it your thinking? Well, of course, being seven, she grasps stuff like this. Oh, Yaya, it's my thinking. And from that point on, it's a done deal. She's able to just go there because she doesn't have that total attachment and identification to that. Yeah, I hope that helps. I know these are huge concepts, and some of this stuff is incredibly radical.
How do I put myself back to that, you know, I mean, like,
Byron Katie's four questions. Just be relentless. Yeah. Be relentless with yourself. Okay. If you are not willing to do that, you're going to always struggle.
Okay.
Because that's what I have found. When I was relentless, and I still am.
Yeah.
I do it online and I do it on paper. So for $9 a month, you can get a thing with she's got two websites, ByronKatie.com and TheWork.com. TheWork.com actually has PDFs that you can download. And the one that I use the most with everybody, including body stuff, she has one for the body. I really like how I have sort of morphed it into the way I'm working it, because it keeps it real specific. It drives it right home really fast, and that's the Judge Your Neighbor's Worksheet. So it doesn't have to be about another person. You can take an addiction through there. You can take anything through that. But you have to start by writing down what your beliefs and your thoughts are. Okay? So right now, I'm going to stop with that because I'm way past time for when I want to do the meditation. Real quickly, for those of you that haven't done a silent meditation before, a way that helps you get started, because the idea is to quiet this down, right? Get focused on your breathing. And by that, what I mean is notice, are you breathing in or breathing out? Pay attention. And what I would start doing is go breathing in, breathing out. I would say the words in my mind. You might look at focusing in on your five senses. So you look around and don't name anything. If you can't stop naming stuff when you're looking at it, close your eyes and just listen to sound. Even in the silence, there's a lot of sound and there's layers of it as you get quieter. Okay? The other thing that you can do that's really helpful is pretend you're a cat sitting in a mouse hole and you're waiting for a mouse to come out. You're waiting for the next thought. So wait for the next thought. And I'll... Okay, so I'm going to use, this is a quartz crystal bowl that is attuned to the crown chakra, and I will start us with this, and then when the 15 minutes are up, I will play it again. Okay, and get comfortable, be wherever you want to be to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We started later than I wanted, and I really try to start on time and end on time. So a couple of things I want to remind you. If you're not on my email list and you want to be on my email list to get notifications of these and other things, make sure that your name and email address is on the list. Also, email me and let me know of 3 good times to have this, with consideration that with summer coming and better weather, Saturday mornings may not be the best time for us to continue this, and I'd love to continue it on some level. You know, I really would. I love doing this, and I just love the opportunity that you all give me, because I can't teach it if there's nobody here. Well, I can. My cats are learning a lot. How to tolerate me. Talk about learning presence. I learn it from them. Okay, keep in mind the practice that I want you to kind of focus on in the next couple of weeks is that those little light whys that we tell. if you love me, you'll do what I want, that we see that and we can convince ourselves that it's interpersonal lubrication. It is not the emotional KY we think it is. It causes problems. So question that belief. And I want to close with the Lord's Prayer, but it's the true translation from Aramaic into English rather than Aramaic to Greek to Latin to 5 levels of English to who knows. O cosmic birther of all radiance and vibration, soften the ground of our being and carve out a space within us where your presence can abide. Fill us with your creativity so that we may be empowered to bear the fruit of your mission. Let each of our actions bear fruit in accordance with our desire. Endow us with the wisdom to produce and share what each being needs to grow and flourish. Untie the tangled threads of destiny that bind us as we release others from the entanglements of past mistakes. Do not let us be seduced by that which would divert us from our true purpose, but illuminate the opportunities of the present moment. For you are the ground and the fruitful vision, the birth power and fulfillment, as all is gathered and made whole again. Aho.